Bit of what we've just been talking about, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more within the banking sector, especially in the United States.
Well, we've seen this happen in Greece, you know, several years back, and we're going to start seeing more and more of this. Like you said, these crises that are coming along, and the fact that all these different banks are coming down in the same day,
yeah,
it's a little bit suspicious.
So the first one is smart cars. And I don't think people realize how much information your vehicle is gathering about you.
And now they're using this information, or they're using this technology, to distribute the processing power. But that doesn't mean that the individual user is in control of it.
No.
That just means that they are now part of this net.
Yeah, it's a network. Welcome back to another episode of Truth Matters. I'm Matthew Shanche here with Mackenzie Drevet. And Mackenzie, we're going to kind of go another layer deeper on this no buy, no sell stuff. So kind of like some of the other episodes that we're doing in sequence, if you're confused about what's happening and you want to understand why we're talking about this, how we arrived at some of these conclusions, go back and watch the last episode, part one of No Buy, No Sell. And in this one, it's kind of different than some of the other episodes we've done in the fact that, like I said that the last time, like we're kind of explaining the internet before the internet was around. So in this one, we're going to explore what blockchain is, how it works within some of these new things like smart cars, smart cities, digital currencies, CBDCs, digital IDs. All of these things are going to be a prominent role in our future. And I don't know if a lot of people understand how it works. So we're not trying to get too far off track from our biblical focus, but we want to educate people about this transformation because it's going to be used to eventually bring about this no buy, no sell system.
Yeah.
And we want people to be ready. We want them to understand why it's happening so they don't. What happens a lot of time, people get in an emotional fear state and they don't make good decisions in that state of mind. So we're hoping that this like lessens the amount of impact that this has on people's hearts and minds, that they can stay focused on Christ and not be so worried about what's happening because they understand what it is and why it's happening.
Yeah. And as Matt was just explaining before we started recording, there's things that happened today and yesterday that we just added in.
Yeah.
We were recording the first part, and between then and now, Matt has been adding in information that is brand new.
Yeah, stuff's happening in real time, and we are doing our best to keep up to date. And so we're going to keep going into the development of the final financial system for the whole world that leads to no buy, no sell. Now, part of the principle that we operate on here at Amazing Discoveries especially is this Ephesians 5:11 verse. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove or expose them.
Yep.
And so that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Affirm the truth.
Exactly. We want to affirm the truth in Jesus Christ, but we want to expose all the elements that are around keeping individuals from choosing, knowing, and finding salvation in Christ alone. And when we understand these things and we have the facts and the proof to hold fast that which is good, prove all things. So a lot of what we do is to take the words of the Bible and bring it off the page and check it with what's happening in the world in real life. And as we prove all things, it strengthens our faith. We have a reason for our faith. We can point people to the scriptures and point people to what's happening in the world. It's exactly what God asks us to do, is to prove all things and to have the Bible be the guide by which we prove all things.
And people need to do that for themselves. They need to prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. If it's not good, we need to discard it.
Yeah.
And people should be testing all these new things that are coming out. Take a look at them. What's the contraindications for whatever it may be that is being put forward? And we're going to go over that today about the digital currencies.
Mm-hmm. And so this was a familiar slide from our last episode. We kind of worked from the top down through. We saw that the end goal is no buy, no sell. We saw that they want to transform the world into what is the coming fourth industrial revolution.
Yep.
They're using events like the health crisis and wars and banking crisis and inflation to expedite this transformation. the system is really some version of the economy of Francesco, whether it goes all the way down the road or it just keeps the tenants that allows this no buy, no sell system to occur, doesn't really matter. It's the principles of the papacy that are being implemented. And it's a clever system. What they've done is they've created schools, they've put people in high positions of power that are papal loyalists, and use different orders as well as think tanks to infuse these ideologies into governments. And that's what we're seeing now, whether it's Canada, the United States, France, Germany, they're all seeming in alignment with the core agenda that we're seeing here, which we looked at the last episode. Yep. And we kind of dove into how the Pope is also leaning on Fortune 500 companies, telling them to follow along with this plan. And we saw the role of BlackRock in kind of pushing this ESG agenda. And now let's take some time to look at the very bottom here, where we're looking more at the technology that's being used. What is blockchain? What are the impact of artificial intelligence going to be? What are smart cities and things of that nature? And as we are talking about in the last episode, this is one of the things that just happened today. Today's November 3rd for us. I don't know when people will see this, but this has happened in between recording these episodes, where we were talking in the first episode about how they're going to use crises in the banking sector as a means to expedite this transformation. And as of today, Bank of America, Chase, U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, Truist Bank, these are large financial institutions, all have gone down on the same day.
Yep.
A system crash. And here we see that they have these new rails. They want to get people on it, and they want to generate these crises. So it kind of validates a bit of what we've just been talking about. And I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more within the banking sector, especially in the United States.
Well, we've seen this happen in Greece, mm-hmm. you know, several years back. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start seeing more and more of this. Like you said, these crises that are coming along, and the fact that all these different banks are coming down in the same day,
yeah,
it's a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, it is a bit suspicious, especially when you look at the charts, the timelines. Like, they have timelines for the full adoption. So Payments Canada is a group within Canada that does large, high-value payments, like nation-to-nation type stuff, and it involves all banks. Payments Canada touches RBC and TD and all of the Scotia banks, all of the major institutions here in Canada. And there's a video that I actually didn't put in here that talks about how they are currently running the old system and the new system in parallel. And the window for the old system to basically be turned off is November 2025. And so they have this plan in place to transition everybody over by that time. And between now and then, I think you're just going to see a huge speed at which all this kind of happens.
That's not far away.
It's not.
We're in November 2023.
We're basically
That's 2 years.
Yeah. It's all of 24 and then the majority of 25. And in the process, you know, it's not like in November 2025, everyone switches over. Most will already have been switched by that time. So, this is not, again, on the page, like theoretical. Canada, the United States, countries around the world are currently, and financial institutions are currently moving this direction very, very quickly. So when we see things like this and upcoming financial crisis-based things, just understand that the goal is to get this new system turned on, up and running. And so we can have an understanding around that. So I think one of the things that's can maybe help people understand how this new system is coming to be. It's like we keep using the early internet as an example, is on the very bottom here, we have Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3.
Yeah.
And I just quickly want to give an example of what Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3 looks like, because for me, this helped me digest what kind of shift we're looking at. When the internet first came out, do you remember the old dial-up internet?
Yep.
The sound that came along when you picked up a landline? And for me, at least, America Online was the big provider. I used to get CDs in the mail. It's like 10 hours free internet of this dial-up. And when you look at when the regular internet was first used, it really started in the 80s in military applications. And then, as you saw, it had kind of like mainstream adoption by the mid to late 90s. And really, the 1980 to 2000 was the era of Web 1. And it was defined by that kind of dial-up AOL But in that time, in the 90s, you had Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google. These guys were starting,
yeah.
but they weren't the valuation huge mega companies. I mean, Amazon started as a rare book seller,
mm-hmm.
and now it's like an everything marketplace. And that's the definition kind of Web 2. It switches from dial-up to more high-speed, fiber optic. You see what were early internet companies have now like set records for valuations people never thought someone would have a valuation of like an Apple or a Google. They would have shattered every chart, every...
Well, Apple was the first trillion-dollar company.
Exactly. And if you had said to somebody in 1980 or 1990 that Apple would be a trillion-dollar company, they'd say, that would never work. You could never have valuations that high, yada, yada, yada.
On some laptops or computers.
Exactly. Or that everyone would be carrying around a personal supercomputer in their pocket yeah. everywhere. But here we are. Web 2 touched every aspect of our lives. Like you can't, I've had some people say, oh, well, you know, I reject blockchain. It's like saying you reject the internet.
Yeah.
You really can't because it becomes so much part of your life in every way, shape, and form.
You can't function without it.
Really?
You want to do anything, they ask for your cell number and they need to send you a text for verifying this. Mm-hmm. You can't upload a YouTube video without a cell phone anymore.
That's right. That's right. And so we started to see in this Web 2 era from 2000 to 2020, that the adoption and integration of the internet into people's lives has been remarkable. Well, now, at the start of 2020, we have started a new web cycle called Web 3 or Web 3.0. And this would be defined as blockchain. And you have the things that most people hear about are Bitcoin, Ethereum, things like stable coins. Stable coins yeah. are basically like one-to-one value with the U.S. dollar. And they're supposed to have all these assets that back them that keep it pegged to the dollar. And if you think about it, we're in 2023. It's like we're 3 years into the Web 1 or Web 2. We're really early. But I think what we're going to see is by the end of this cycle, well, hopefully we don't even get close to the end of this cycle, that Jesus comes back and all this stuff ends and we can just be with our Savior, but that we are at the early stages of yep. this new adoption. But as like with previous two cycles, it's going to touch every aspect of people's lives. And whether they like it or don't like it, it just is becomes a part of society.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that gives a little preview of what this actually looks like. And now we can watch a short video on what blockchain is, because I'm not very good at explaining it. So I'm going to let this video do a better job for us.
When you vote, have you ever wondered whether your ballot is actually counted? If you meet someone online, how do you know they're who they say they are? When you buy coffee that's labeled Fairtrade, what makes you so certain of its origin? To be sure, really sure, about any of those questions, you'd need a system where records could be stored, facts could be verified by anyone, and security is guaranteed. That way, no one could cheat the system by editing records, because everyone using the system would be watching. Systems like this are on the horizon, and the software that powers them is called a blockchain. Blockchains store information across a network of personal computers, making them not just decentralized, but distributed. This means no central company or person owns the system, yet everyone can use it and help run it. This is important because it means it's difficult for any one person to take down the network or corrupt it. The people who run the system use their computer to hold bundles of records submitted by others, known as blocks, in a chronological chain. The blockchain uses a form of math called cryptography to ensure that records can't be counterfeited or changed by anyone else. You've probably heard of the blockchain's first killer app, a form of digital cash called Bitcoin that you can send to anyone, even a complete stranger. Bitcoin is different from credit cards, PayPal, or other ways to send money because there isn't a bank or financial middleman involved. Instead, people from all over the world help move the digital money by validating others' Bitcoin transactions with their personal computers, earning a small fee in the process. Bitcoin uses the blockchain by tracking records of ownership over this digital cash, so only one person can be the owner at a time and the cash can't be spent twice, like counterfeit money in the physical world can. But Bitcoin is just the beginning for blockchains. In the future, blockchains that manage and verify online data could enable us to launch companies that are entirely run by algorithms, making self-driving cars safer, help us protect our online identities, and even track the billions of devices on the Internet of Things. These innovations will change our lives forever, and it's all just beginning. To learn more about the urgent future of the blockchain, please visit IFTF.org/blockchainfutureslab.
So we can kind of get an idea of what blockchain is, and it's this new technology. She said it's not just decentralized, it's distributed. And that allows, in essence, it is a very good piece of tech when you're trying to make an immutable, unchangeable record of anything. It can't be hacked, it can't be changed, because you have all these independent nodes validating whether it's good or not. It'd be like thousands of manuscripts of the New Testament going around and one forgery of the New Testament. But then everyone sees that the real ones are there, and this one stands out like a sore thumb because it doesn't compare to the other one.
The funny thing about the blockchain is it's similar to a technology that has been used for a lot of years in the illegal market to transfer information between different nodes, and that's torrents. Torrents were used, not always in a legal sense, for people to transfer. It could be movies or software or whatever, and it was torrented. These were hosted on individual people's computers, and you would download, maybe you'd have 50 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 2,000 people with the same information. And now they're using this information, or they're using this technology to distribute the processing power, but that doesn't mean that the individual user is in control of it.
No.
That just means that they are now part of this net.
Yeah, it's a network.
Yeah.
Yeah, of validators, basically, which is better than centralized, you know, but at the same time, it's not as free from impact or influence from negative or bad faith actors. The one
downside, and as the video is mentioning there, you have all this information that's logged in the computer. Now, all that information connected there goes directly to whoever can access that and whoever is the operator of the system. So when they create the blockchain, they're in effect trying to receive all that information, because now everybody can access that because it's open.
Mm-hmm.
It's decentralized, but that literally means that they have access to everybody now.
Yeah, correct. And so one of the interesting things is you can use websites that are set up that you can follow the money wherever it goes. So anytime someone passes any crypto to each other, let's say you sent me $100 in crypto, I kept it, and then I sent it to five people, and those five people sent a piece of it to them. I can follow it right now on the internet everywhere it goes. Yeah. Now, the addresses are anonymized, so I can't see, like, it's just a bunch of numbers, but I can follow where it goes. And then if you can find out who has those wallets, which there are some ways to try to do that.
Always is.
And so what's really crazy is, like, you really, there's nowhere to hide. Let's say the government wants to, take all your money, and you're like, no, I'm going to send it out to 1,000 people. Well, it's going to be very easy for them to track down exactly where it went. And so we're going to kind of look through now how the blockchain works with some of these real world situations. And we'll go through them kind of quickly just to give people an idea of what this looks like, rather than just being tech, but what it would be like in real world applications. So the first one is smart cars. Now, I don't think people realize, I didn't put this article in here, how much information your vehicle is gathering about you. And if you have a newer vehicle, especially.
Well, you plug your phone in, so everything is being downloaded from your phone. All the places you go, all the information you're giving it.
Yeah. If you have GPS in your car, it has the ability to transmit information from your car to satellite to another location. And there's an article talking about a whole bunch of categories, whether it's your phone, your Alexa, your whatever you have, and what the privacy infringement is versus what the user thinks that it is. And cars came up as the worst in terms of the amount of information gathered when users don't even realize it. What people don't get is it's judging how hard you push your gas. It's judging how hard you push your brake. It's judging how much you weigh when your seatbelt tightens or when you sit and your seat adjusts automatically for you. There is more information information that car gathers about an individual than most people even realize. Yeah. So now with the addition of smart cars and this new form of blockchain for payments, your car is actually going to become a avenue for payments. So let's say a speeding ticket got caught by camera. It's deducted from your car balance automatically. Parking, any kind of anything to do with charging that involves like a vehicle will be done instantaneously without the user being able to do anything about it. And so we'll see. It causes the car to have a history of permanently recorded and potentially accessible records, which could infringe on an individual's right to privacy. There's a risk that such a system could be mandated, so it could be forced. Forcing users to adopt a technology that tracks and records their movements and financial transactions with no option to opt out. It's basically leading to a surveillance state on wheels.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because you'd think that this distributed decentralized tech would help with anonymity. But at this stage, it's just opening the door, as the last episode says. All of this is just a means to centralized control.
Well, in these smart cars now, you don't have even physical connections to your tires anymore, right? It's like just a video game steering wheel. It's just electronics that are going from that steering wheel, receiving on the sensors to turn the tires, everything else. There's no actual physical connection there. So you can turn right and it's going to go left because there's no connection. And they can choose to do that at any point in time and oops, it was just an accident.
I always thought self-driving cars would be amazing. Because you could just relax and do all this stuff. And now, obviously, Teslas are the main ones that have the self-driving features. But we're seeing that maybe this could be used in the future to, one, you don't own your car. You like fractional ownership or whatever in a car. It comes, picks you up. If it's you're not allowed to go in a designated area or designated time, the car won't run. It won't take you there. All of these things, the blockchain has to be enacted for these things to really reach that potential.
Well, that's what I mean. When talking to Elon Musk, he said, you know, basically he doesn't need to make money on the vehicle itself because the long-term output of those vehicles is so different. It's a technology company for one. It's not a car company. And then they can utilize those vehicles for however they want to use that the policies, right?
Yep.
They've talked that just some of the less intrusive uses is they will use your vehicle as a self-driving Uber while you're not in use of it.
Yeah, it could be earning or whatever while you're not using it. Yeah, and that's kind of the fractionalized ownership kind of system. So let's see what it means in terms of smart cities. Now, again, just because there's only so much time, I have all sorts of videos, just like we saw earlier with the transformation to this new system. There's all these videos of these people talking about new smart cities, 15-minute cities, whatever it may be. And we're going to look at the Russian-Ukraine war piece because it deserves its own episode in relation to all of this stuff. But a document, a case study done by Harvard, talks about how all of the Ukraine cities will be rebuilt as smart cities. There was information about the Hawaii, Maui city that was destroyed that was rejecting the smart city proposals, and they were obviously paid the price for that. So it's very real, these smart cities, and there's technology that...
And all that land in Hawaii now was bought up right away.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to bring things out that aren't factual.
Yeah.
But some of these things are very curious on the situations and circumstance regarding them. But these things we're talking about here, whether it's smart cars, smart cities, the blockchain, the currencies, these are all very factual. Mm-hmm. And we showed in some of the videos in the last episode where they're saying these applications where the money will have expiration dates and all this information will know what you're buying, what you're eating, what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that they're trying to gain information about you.
Yeah. And this reason the city is smart is because it's gathering all the data as you're moving around without you even realizing it. There's something we'll cover in future episodes about offline payments and even using light as technology to transmit information. I'm not even going to get into it right now, but that LEDs can receive and send information. It's called Li-Fi, light technology that can send this information. There's patents on it. There's websites that break down exactly how it works. So it's kind of interesting to me that so much has been mandated to put LEDs in everything. These are actually information receivers and transmitters, and most people don't even realize it. So let's see. Every utility usage, traffic movement, and civic engagement could be immutably recorded, potentially stripping away the anonymity of urban living. This level of monitoring might grant state actors or private entities unprecedented access to personal data, enabling real-time tracking of individuals' behaviors and movements, and automatically deduct any fines or penalties from the user account, and there's no recourse or avenue to object.
So convenient.
Yeah. You just look down and you see your balance is, you know, $100 less. You're like, what happened? Well, as you walk by, you actually jaywalked in this moment and we find you 50 here. And then when you threw that trash into the trash can, we saw that that had a carbon impact of da-da-da-da-da. So this is what blockchain allows within a macro environment. So from your car, from your city, where you live, what you do, what you eat. This carbon credit monitoring system has been talked about at length by the UN specifically in trying to set up a monitoring ability to really gauge the output and impact of, you know, production and distribution of companies, corporations. And essentially what it allows them to do is have an unprecedented level of oversight over everyday activities, from driving to heating homes to purchasing goods. All of this could create this granular carbon tax system. And just skipping down to the bottom, it says that the potential penalizing or restricting of individuals' lifestyle choices through a state-imposed blockchain-enforced carbon ledger.
Yeah.
And this is not a myth. The UAE already plans to create a national carbon credit blockchain-based system. We also see that the World Economic Forum put out a white paper just in April 2023 that breaks down in great detail exactly how you can, from every point of the production process, assign and track and monitor and penalize the carbon impact of each part of the process. So really showing people that this is not just conceptual, that these things are being talked about at a very high level.
And it's not something that we're just making up.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming straight from the horse's mouth, straight from the source, their own papers. And this is very recent.
Yep.
Some of the things started as early as 2020 with what we've been referencing, which means that they've already been in the works for 3 years,
yep,
which is a long time for some of these guys.
Yeah, because especially they work quickly. Yeah, they sure do. And some of the early blockchain stuff we're talking about, 2009 was when it really started like coming up. And then in 2014, we started seeing companies being formed around this. And now here we are, you know, almost a decade later. And it's really moving fast now. So understanding what blockchain looks like with digital currencies and CBDCs, as we heard in the videos, programmability, ability to monitor and track, the ability to expire or pretty much do whatever you want it to do. And it gives unprecedented surveillance of individual spending habits, monitor and even control the spending in real time. And they'll say the reason they need like the expiry on these things is to stimulate the economy. But we know that the inclusive capitalism, as we looked in the last episode, inclusive capitalism equals you own nothing and you're happy.
So, and why do they have to stimulate it? Well, because they caused a collapse of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's all in the plan as well.
Yeah, and the idea is so you don't have the ability to save. And you can't save any money because it always expires. So you're never going to not spend it because you might as well spend it than lose it. And it creates this vicious cycle where you're totally dependent on the state. And we're going to look a little bit more at as this relates to universal basic income here in a moment. So this could lead to a scenario where financial privacy is eliminated and state actors could impose financial censorship, restrict purchases, or enforce negative interest rates directly on citizens' digital wallets. So this is, we're going to eventually touch on Elon Musk. We're going to do a whole deep dive into him. And he has bought Twitter to make it WeChat. And he's going to turn it into a payments platform. He just recently got a couple payments licenses.
He practiced with PayPal.
Yeah. And that's where you see his relationship with Peter Thiel and the other guy who started Affirm, which is that buy now, pay later. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But they actually formed this group known as the PayPal Mafia. Mm-hmm. And it's these early web developers that have changed, like turned into these giant Fortune 500 companies and CEOs of these major institutions. But we're starting to see like this theme. So in the future on this blockchain, no one carries around this physical cash anymore. Everything you have is on a digital wallet. And at this point, because you can't do negative interest rates with the current dollar system, it just doesn't work. And this new system, negative interest rates, works because basically that's the dissolving money. And for people who are like, well, what's a negative interest rate? Well, if you have a savings account right now, you earn like 1% or 2%. In the future, it'll be negative 1% or negative 2% or negative 5%. And you'll look and your balance will get smaller every month.
It'll be like a mortgage instead of having an account where you're gaining. It's a mortgage. You're doing your monthly payment into it. If you have money there, it's costing you money.
It's costing you money to hold money. And they're trying to say that that's going to stimulate the economy. We actually had videos in here about, I removed it just for the sake of time, that they're going to use these negative interest rates to say, you can't hold money. You're not allowed to hold or save. So these negative interest rates are made possible. But we're starting to see like a real theme with how the blockchain is used with smart cars, smart cities, CBDCs. Everything's about monitoring, controlling, surveilling, and that's what the blockchain allows you to do on a global scale in real time. So if you're looking at this no buy, no sell system in the future, now it's starting to make sense how it could come to fruition. It's a mandated, you can't opt out, there is no other alternative, and now it comes with all these penalties and restrictions. Now we get closer to the end here, and they start saying if you don't uphold Sunday, as we looked at Project 2025 and in Laudato Si and everywhere. While they may be different on some things, they are the same on Sabbath, Sunday worship. And so now these pieces start to really make sense, at least to me, on how this global no buy, no sell system could really occur.
And it's one of the most intelligent systems. And intelligent things is to create something that creates its own demand. So you have, for instance, your cell phone. Right? That is one of the best tools that ever could have been invented for gathering information. Mm-hmm. You took something that people didn't even know they needed. If you took someone's phone for a day, it's like the world has ended.
Yeah.
You know, they can't be without their phone. And now everybody has one, everybody needs one. And it's like, oh yeah, how can you survive without a phone? How can you do this? But this is exactly the type of process they're doing. So they create these blockchains. They open it to everyone. Hey, you need a cell phone. This cell phone can do so much for you. Oh, this blockchain currency, this digital currency can make your life so much easier. Mm-hmm. Oh, your job doesn't forget to pay you anymore. Everything's equalized. And it all looks like this nice, great thing. But if they shut down all cell phones, then what would society do?
Especially if they shut down all currencies,
all these things are connected now.
Yes.
All digital. You don't have physical things. You don't have physical pictures anymore. We used to take real pictures and have real pictures to look at. Mm-hmm. And you save things like even, oh, I'll take a screenshot. You know, we don't have anything written down. We don't have anything physical. So they can take it because you don't have a physical, tangible thing to even utilize it anymore.
Yep, and it's working. Like we've adopted, we have shifted towards the digital, mostly out of ease of use. You don't have to go print off all these things. But I'll say something about the tech itself, blockchain. Can't remember who it was, but it was like maybe one of Walter's old videos where he's talking about the Jesuits and how they get information and that they literally get information from demons. And he lists off a bunch of things that they said that they got from this source. And one of the things he talked about was technology. And when you really look at the blockchain technology setup, I think, to me, no human, no person came up with this system. It was, I think, granted through demonic channels. Because when you look at how it accomplishes the no buy, no sell, how it furthers Satan's agenda to centralize control, to force people to comply with certain standards, it fits it to a T. And it's so sophisticated. And it seems like it came out of nowhere back in the late 2009, 10, 11, that I would not be surprised at all if this was part of the tech that had been received or channeled through the Jesuits.
You know, when we look back at, it says in the days of Noah, right? Mm-hmm. Well, from a study we can see that at the days of Noah, they were doing genetic modification. They were doing genetic mutation to humans, that these were now being mutations done to humans. They had technology that I think that we would even marvel at today. There's a lot of evidence for that. There's a book that we sell. It's called Secret of the Lost Races by Rene Norberg. And these are, we can see this progression all the way through. And like you say, now one thing that the occult has is they say they have this secret knowledge. They're always talking about this secret knowledge. Well, what's the secret knowledge? This is knowledge that is given to them by agents that are on the other side of the realm that we don't see all the time or interact with all the time, but it's very real. And they're, I believe, receiving information from them on how do we move Satan's like overarching plan forward. And this knowledge is given to them, and then they can implement that because they're working together.
Yeah.
They're in the same goal.
Well, Alice A. Bailey, who founded Lucius Truss or Lucifer Publishing Company, openly said she received information from an entity named Raja Kool or something to that degree. And it's the same type of concept. If they're receiving that information, the Jesuit order is also receiving it through these same types of means. We're not saying every Jesuit knows about this. There are many vows, and we'll cover this in the deep dive on the Jesuits. There's actually five vows. It's not until you get to the fourth vow stage, which could take a whole life. Sometimes you can't even get there. There's not a certain amount of time. You have to be selected or chosen to fit a criteria that would go to the lengths
honorary.
Needed.
Honorary.
Yeah. And it's deeply impactful in terms of like what someone's willing to do when they get to the fourth vow. So if you ever meet a Jesuit, ask how many vows they've taken in the process. If you ever meet a fourth vow, if they're willing to admit it, they know they're worshiping Lucifer. Yep. They know that they're actively trying to destroy Protestant Christianity, crush the heads of the baby, the whole nine yards. But most of the time when people read the Jesuit oath, they think every Jesuit's taken that, but it's not until that fourth vow or so. But back to kind of understanding how this technology is going to play a role, I think that it's pretty safe to say, although we are speculating, want to be fair and clear, that this looks demonic right from the get-go, where it came from and how it's going to be implemented. And here we see SDGs, ESGs. These are basically just, you know, common good Catholic social teachings in the form of civil goals and principles for people to enact. And it talks about exactly that, imposing stringent state-mandated goals, enforcing compliance in ways that may not take into account the complex realities of economic and social ecosystems. And that's by the first two goals on the Sustainable Development Goals, no hunger, no poverty. Yep. Well, that's just not taking into account the complex realities, the ecosystem. It's rejecting the word of God, which says opposite of that. And so we hopefully can see how these SDGs really, or these, the blockchain really covers a broad spectrum of things. It's not just payments. It's all of the things that we've talked about here, even going down to digital IDs, where, you know, people can literally be monitored, surveilled. Again, the theme is the same. Everything is about tracking, controlling, and even implementing what's known as a social credit score.
Now, going back in history a little bit, we've started this process decades ago, and it was on a much more manual level, not as a digital level, where we had our SIN number. You know, everybody has a SIN number. You can't, you know, get a job, open a bank.
Explain what SIN is, because there are Americans who call it Social Security number.
Okay, Social Security number.
Yeah.
Social Insurance number.
SIN is Social Insurance number, but it's weird. When I came here, I'm like, it's called SIN?
Yeah, it is a SIN.
Yeah, it's very strange, but it's a Social Insurance number. It's the same thing as a Social Security number in the States.
Now, the funny thing about the Social Security number is that this is actually a corporate business number that's assigned to you at birth. Now, this, you can go way deep down this rabbit hole, but it was implemented around the First World Wars. Before then, they didn't have these things. People were people, and they just did what people do. And then they said, okay, we need to, you know, keep track of this. We have monetary funds connected to individuals. And they said, here's your birth certificate. And that was actually instituted as a tracking mechanism. So it was a process by which they could more manually track. Okay, you gave your social security number or SIN number to this company. Now they know you've worked there. Now they know you've worked here. And you can check what your information connected to your number is, mm-hmm. you know, what's been happening, where you've worked and different information. Mm-hmm. Now they take that with the digital IDs and it's making it even easier for them to track these things because it's all automatic. You know, even with your cell phone, you're looking at it and they're getting all the information they need. The fact that we still have to go to like an embassy and take our fingerprints and our thumbprint and our eyes, you know, they should just say, what's your phone number? Or, you know, they just know who you are and yeah. they have it right there. Because we scan, you know, on your laptop, you have a way to log in. You just hold your finger there. Mm-hmm. Or you just use your face and you log into your phone. And it's going to continue to go. And like you said, the vehicles, you get in the vehicle, it knows it's you. It has a camera, can see you, mm-hmm. logs you in. You're driving down the highway, AI. Or walking across the street, AI is doing face recognition to see who you are, where you are, how far you've traveled. All these things just compounding. It's almost overwhelming.
Yeah.
The amount that they can actually trace in a person.
And if there's like, people are like, oh, you guys are really off the deep end. You don't have to look any further for all this stuff to be true than China. China is currently implementing the blockchain to issue digital versions of their currency. They make people have smartphones, and we're going to look at a clip here in a second. You cannot buy or do anything in China without this smartphone. Like, you have to have somebody get you one if you don't have one that's connected to a Chinese bank account. So, like, the adoption of social credit scores, the adoption of this technology, and using it in a suppressive manner is already a real use case in the world. And people don't realize that the Jesuits say since the 15th or 16th century that they have run the world, including China, since that period of time. And so I think the reason China has been such an early adopter and aggressive adopter of this is because it's basically the best testing ground for the Jesuits to pull this off. And if they could, if the whole world could be just done like China, they would rather have it that way and just do it exactly like that. But people were like, oh, this will never happen. This isn't a real thing. It already is a real thing. Let's take a look, actually. Here's somebody who's not living in China, but they came to visit, and they can't even buy food because they don't have their digital ID.
So the latest in this dystopian outrage that is now all of China, apparently, is I once again cannot buy food. A couple days ago, my uncle and my cousin helped me get a cell phone that is linked to a Chinese bank card so that I could buy anything. But now, apparently, it has been flagged for some reason, and I have to pass facial recognition identity verification, which is insane, because all I want to do is just spend my gift card balance on this debit card. I can't believe I'm doing this. I have to open my mouth. Terrifying. Oh. And of course, because it was my cousin who set this up for me.
So basically, she can't even buy anything unless she passes this thing where she's sitting in public, opening and closing her mouth. It's yeah. really like dehumanizing some of this stuff. But it's a very real piece of the Chinese culture today. And so when we're looking at this and saying, how could this come into fruition? China is a great place to look and say, wow, This is real. This is how it's being used. There's all sorts of videos that you can find of Chinese citizens with low social credit scores and what they have to do to get their credit scores back up and how it limits them from functioning in society. And all of this is being done because blockchain technology is now being implemented. Now, some of the dangers, we've talked about it, so we'll just kind of quickly highlight the invasion of privacy that blockchain brings, the end of anonymity. You saw her verification failed. There's no recourse then for her to talk to somebody right away to get it sorted out. You're just subject to the technology rejecting you in that moment, and you literally might have to go ask a stranger to go buy something for you. And you can't hand them a $20 bill to say, thanks, here's the cash for what you just spent. You're going to have to find some way to send them money that the government allows you to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is total control.
Yeah.
Loss of ownership control. So there's things inside of a blockchain called smart contracts. And this might be one of the most dangerous aspects of blockchain. So now imagine you own a house, you buy a car, but it has a smart contract that has all these conditions that must be met. Let's say one of those conditions is your social credit score can't drop below a certain percentage point or number. And as soon as your percentage drops, your
privileges
title
just go away.
Yeah. It immediately transfers to somebody else. You can't stop it. You can't change it. Now, let's say there's an error with something like that, and you have to go through the process of trying to untangle this whole thing. These smart contracts are going to be everywhere, and they're going to be extremely dangerous. The blockchain is going to be used to enforce ideologies, like we just saw with this young woman from China. The smart contracts could be programmed to restrict purchases that don't align with state, political, or ethical standards. What we saw in the last episode, all the videos where they said we're going to be able to program money and do all of these things. So they're going to enforce ideologies. Again, looking at this from the idea of Satan and what he wants, this no buy, no sell system, this works perfectly to fit this Bible prophecy.
And a lot of people might say, well, it's okay if you're not allowed to buy bad things. But who's determining that?
Mm-hmm.
We see that the groups that are determining what is good and what is bad is quite dangerous. We've talked about in earlier episodes the Vancouver Declaration that says we don't want you to own your own property. We don't want these things. So is that going to be something that's deemed dangerous or not allowed to be purchased?
Mm-hmm.
In some of the states and in some of the different areas, you can't have a garden, so you won't be able to buy seeds. You won't be able to buy food. You won't, you know, any one of these things. So these aren't little things. These are going to be bigger and bigger, and according to Revelation 13:17, it's going to end in those people who don't want to go along with worshiping the image of the beast, that they won't be able to buy or sell at all, and you'll be just shut down. Yep. Your internet, your power, because you're all these services that we think we have now, whether it's phone, and now phone is over the air, it's not even through lines anymore, you know, how many people have a landline now? You know, there's still some.
I don't even know if they have them anymore.
It's very few people have a landline.
And even those are the VoIP, their voice over internet protocol.
There you go.
Kind of thing. So I don't even know if they're landlines anymore.
Now you have Starlink, and now everything, not even fiber. Fiber used to at least have a physical connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these things are going to be interconnected. Like you said, it just automatically gets docked. And if they see that something's in violation or your credit score goes down, they can just turn it all off.
That's right. That's right.
Just
so,
like that.
Elimination of financial privacy, potentials for abuse. I mean, this whole system is just ripe for control.
We've seen a very good example of this. Now, I am not in promotion of this person at all. I'm using it as an example, but Andrew Tate. So Andrew Tate, at one point here in the past little while, he was the most Googled man on the planet. He was promoting a certain ideology, not saying that I agree with his ideology, but all of his accounts across the board, Gmail, banking, Instagram, YouTube, everything taken down same day, can't log in. How does your bank and your Instagram and your Facebook and your email have anything to do connected? Because it's all over this digital system.
Mm-hmm.
And they've connected it all, and all of his stuff went down at the same time. And now you're going to tell me that there's not an overarching connection and plan?
Yeah. Sure. Well, somebody who's able to connect those dots very quickly and turn you off like a light switch.
Yeah.
So as we're talking about no buy, no sell, Andrew Tate would be an example of someone who got turned off. Now, change that to the remnant. And the reason they're getting turned off is because their ideology is following every precept of God, including his holy Sabbath day. And this is going to become a problem in the future. And there's an award-winning investigative journalist, Alex Newman, that talks about this same thing. It's not just us. He sees that CBDCs in conjunction with digital ID and artificial intelligence can construct this literal prison planet. And like that poor girl, she's just standing there opening her mouth. It's ridiculous. They want to eliminate cash. We know that's true because Christine Lagarde said as much in the previous episode we saw.
Well, and if they get their way by November 2025.
Yep.
That's not very far away.
No.
And all this is going to change.
But we're going to talk at some point about LSA Bailey and the 2025 initiative. But a lot of things seem to be pointing to this 2025 year. And we're actually going to look at what we could possibly be seeing as a catalyst event coming up to get everything turned over by this time. I think a lot's going to happen between now and the end of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
It says on the bottom here, and then when you combine it with digital ID, the surveillance and artificial intelligence that is now being developed, you realize they're building a prison planet and we are the prisoners. And on some level, he's correct. And so I wanted to show, because we haven't touched on AI much, and there was a conference at the International Monetary Fund. Every time we're looking at these things, the BIS, Bank of International Settlements, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, they're all playing a major role in rolling these things out. This was the opening of a conference of theirs, and it's AI talking to people about it during an AI conference about how to control and manage AI. And what's in here is creepy. And so as we watch this, just kind of think about all the things we've talked about up to this point and how AI can be used to, because all we've talked about is the mass amount of data that blockchain is going to bring into the digital world. But how do you manage, organize it, and spit it out in usable facet? That's where AI comes in. Predictive behavior and such. So let's see what opened this AI conference at the IMF. So basically, they're saying that this AI is here to stay. You either get on board with it or you're going to be in big trouble.
You'll be sad face.
You'll be sad face. It will pick winners and losers, and the gap could be huge. So imagine the gap being you can't buy or sell, and you can buy and sell.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're seeing that this no buy, no sell system is really forming at a rapid pace. And the game changer has been AI being turned on and blockchain being turned on. These two things together are about to fundamentally change and already are fundamentally changing every aspect of our world. And oddly enough, just yesterday, the Biden administration and Joe Biden signed an executive order allowing the military branch to immediately adopt AI into all processes. So that's how to deploy troops, that's how to move goods, that's how to track individuals, predictive programming. And they say they have to do this because they're keeping up with China and Russia and the likes. But this is a major moment, the fact that the government and the military are now full on adopting AI. And before, in this video, she talks about how the military has adopted some components of AI, but now there are no more restraints on what they can do. And the software that they're going to use is a group called Palantir. And actually, Palantir's on that big chart that we keep showing. So when we get into Elon Musk and we get into Palantir, we're going to get into Palantir as well, and we're going to look at what all this has to do with this coming false Christ, the Lucius Trust organization, what X really means in terms of Christ, and what Elon is so obsessed with it for. All these things are going to play a role, and Palantir plays a big piece. In fact, their stock jumped 30% in the last 2 days with the announcement of this.
You know, the scary thing about this being allowed, AI, we can already see the dangers that AI is bringing, because look at, and this is something that's been taking place a lot. You maybe have seen, some of the viewers have seen, they'll take famous people, whether it's Joe Rogan, whether it's Mr. Beast, whether it's anybody else, and they will have an AI version of them promoting a product, promoting something, and it's for scams, or it's for promoting someone's product. Mm-hmm. Maybe the product isn't necessarily a scam, but it's not that person who's actually promoting it.
Yeah.
And some of these people are actually talking about this and saying, hey, is this legal? Is this okay? And the problem is, it's so fuzzy right now. The laws, it is not illegal. So people can replicate what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If they want to get you in trouble, they will come up with means. You know, we're told it by inspiration that in order to enact some of these laws and get people in trouble, that they will actually come up with things that the person never did. Mm-hmm. Well, how are they proving this? Video evidence, picture evidence, phone call evidence, whatever it may be. They will duplicate your voice, your picture, your video. Oh, look what he's doing over here. I didn't do it. We have a video, surveillance camera footage of you doing this thing.
Yep.
Talking to this person, that person is this, and the sky's the limit.
It really is. In fact, most people don't realize that when you're on a call, you call into your bank or somebody and they say, this call will be recorded for quality assurance. Companies are recording everything. Whether you're on hold and you don't think you're being recorded, you're being recorded for 100% of being on the line. Those companies are now taking your data and they sell them to third parties. Those third parties can now use that to create profiles of you. Did you call in and were you angry? How did you respond when you were angry? Now you can create digital profiles of people using AI deepfakes, is what they call them, and can create, like you said, your voice, your person, speaking as it were. You'd hear it and you'd be like, yeah, that sounds like me. So people don't even realize they're giving this data up when they're on the line like that.
And this has actually been able to be done for a long time. Mm. There's even situations that a lot of people maybe know about who were, you know, looking into these things around 2001, where there was phone calls taking place, whatever, that weren't actually made by the people who weren't actually there. And it sounds like them saying things to them and asking for certain information, whatever it might be, that didn't actually take place. And these are generated voices, generated things that the person actually didn't do.
Yeah.
And the fact that if the military can do this and they want to push an agenda, now they can do that whenever they feel like.
Yeah.
They can generate whatever they need to in order to promote, we'll use the word propaganda, to do these things.
Well, part of the reason Elon bought Twitter was because it's one of the greatest information gathering tools of all time. And he has his own AI that he's plugged into the back end of it. And he's taking all of this data, all human reactions, how society reacts to different information, how individuals sound when this happens and that, and we're giving them the information every time we post. We're giving them information that is training AI in the background. And in fact, one of the reasons Musk almost backed out of the deal, of course, that whole thing was fake. He was going to buy it no matter what, was because there were so many bots on the platform. And in fact, AI is so sophisticated now. We have to realize that if we see ChatGPT today and we're using it like regularly as a society, that tech has been around for at least a decade, being used for military.
Most likely 2 decades.
At probably 20 years or so. Yeah, you're right. And if it finally gets to us, you can just imagine what they actually have. That's 20 years till we see the next one that they're using
and
now.
And you can imagine the stuff we have today, how far we've gone in 20 years.
Yeah.
It's 2023. Can you imagine what we had in 2003?
Yeah.
From where we went to now, if we have another 20 years with this, the rate we're going,
yeah,
that's pretty scary.
It is scary because it means that if we're out here using ChatGPT, those guys are using something 10 times more sophisticated behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that's why, you know, they're coming out and using this stuff, although I know they've been using some of these things for a long time. But these social media platforms has become like a treasure trove of human thought and emotion that is training these AIs, and Elon's building robots that are supposed to go in your home to help you with tasks and all these stuff. Everything is, it's AI is training, will be used to
all monitoring.
Make the robots. Yeah.
None of the things that he's been doing are services.
No.
You know, not service companies or anything like that. All of them are tech. It's all tech, all information-based companies, which is extremely interesting, but we can continue back to here.
Yeah. Well, it says the head of the SEC says that there will be a financial crash caused by AI. I do think we will in the future have a financial crisis. And then he continues on below that the crisis could happen as soon as the late 2020s or early 2030s. I venture to say what crisis they could get to turn the system on could happen by 2025. Yeah. But this is just speculation. We're not time setting. We're not prognosticating. We're just saying, hey, let's look at the pieces of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. Just be aware.
Where their planned dates are, where their agendas are sending certain things. Now, like you said, God's in charge of the playbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all are praying that God holds back the winds so that more people can hear the message, because that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get a message out, and we need as much time as possible, because there's a lot of people who are unaware of what's really going on.
Yep. Now this AI, it said in that little intro video that it's learning our jobs. Yep. And here Musk just the other day came out and said that AI will eventually create a situation where no job is needed. And this is where I think AI and blockchain become the most dangerous, because if you're looking at the 2030 agenda, you own nothing and you're happy. And look, we acknowledge the Hegelianism that's going on. We don't know if it's going to go that full direction. But the adoption of this tech, AI, it's already here. It's already been turned on. How it's used and to what extent, we don't know. But it's going to be used to massively disrupt the world. And if this is correct, it says it's hard to say exactly what that moment is, but there will come a point where no job is needed. AI will be able to do everything. He says you might be able to have a job if you want personal satisfaction, but AI will be able to do everything. And this is where I think people don't realize the desire for the powers that be to implement a universal basic income.
Yep.
So if AI disrupts all the jobs and we have a financial crisis or another COVID-like situation or a health scare situation, now they're needing to disrupt all of these industries, and you got to provide stimulus and save everybody.
Yep.
What better way to come out than say, hey, don't worry, everyone. We're going to start giving you monthly checks, and we're going to pay it through blockchain. It's going to go straight to your digital wallet, and don't worry. We saved the day.
This is how it, you know, it all sounds good, great incentivized, right? But that brings us to UBI. Mm-hmm. That and another word for that is redistribution of wealth, which we've heard about for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's just the prettied up version of redistribution of wealth. We take, you know, we were talking a little bit about like the Robin Hood scenario, take from the rich and give to the poor. Mm-hmm. But really, we're just taking from the rich and we'll keep it and we'll keep everyone poor.
Yeah. And with our dissolving currency, you pay UBI because almost everyone needs it. But it dissolves, and this is the scenario that I was talking about earlier, where how do you get a whole bunch of people who don't want CBDCs now to take CBDCs is that you cut off their means of support, and then you offer them the lifeline through CBDCs, and they're like, yeah, I don't care if it's CBDC or not. I can feed my family tonight. I can pay my rent or whatever.
Look what happened the last 3 years. People lose their jobs. People need money. Here, we're going to give you support. But you have to pay this back by X amount of time and these stipulations, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't make that back, then what's going to happen? And we were talking about this in some previous episodes where in order to alleviate that debt that was created, well, the UN is going to come in and they're going to wipe that debt. But in exchange, they get ownership of the land, the property. They get ownership of whatever is involved there.
And you don't really, with the right crisis situation, you don't really have a choice in the sense that like they're going to either take it all anyway because you can't pay it.
Yep.
Or we'll give you, let you keep it, but it's really ours, but we're giving it to you with this stipend, with all these conditions.
Yeah.
And this is, to me, how we're going to see universal basic income really get pushed around the world. It's the right crisis, the right time, the new technology's turned on, the FedNow systems are on and working, and now you can start to implement this with the right crisis.
Yeah.
Most people don't realize that the stimulus money that was sent, which was 40% of all U.S. dollars ever printed in a 24-month period, which has led to all this hyperinflation issues in the United States, they almost paid that money in this new Fed-issued digital dollars. It says, many Americans don't own bank accounts and will have to receive their aid by mail, which could cause delays. In order to distribute funds quickly, as directly and quickly as possible to U.S. citizens, policymakers discuss the possibility of the Fed using blockchain technology to do this. And this is from 2020, this article. While it's widely expected to be included in the final version of the proposed Take Responsibility for Workers and Family Act, the U.S. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who we've covered a lot, made no mention of it when she delivered the draft proposal to Congress. So it was in the proposal, and then they took it out at the last minute. Now, there's been a lot of narrative this year about de-dollarization, that the BRICS countries, you know, this whole Russia war thing got kicked off this whole effort for these BRICS nations to come together. And I'll quickly summarize why. When Russia attacked Ukraine, the United States penalized them by kicking them out of the SWIFT system. Right now, SWIFT is how money moves between nations all over the world. And it's like the main system. Well, when they did that, other countries said, whoa, wait a second. What if we upset the United States? They're going to kick us out of SWIFT.
Yeah.
And so even that, I think, was a setup to accelerate the adoption of this technology, because now all the BRICS nations get together and they say, we're going to trade in oil and all these things in our own currencies. And now this has supercharged the digital dollar effort, because it says a digital dollar will strengthen the currency's global dominance.
Yeah.
So now the momentum came from Russia getting kicked out of SWIFT is in part down the line going to give momentum for the digital dollar. Like all of these things are planned. And the dollar and the United States, they're not going anywhere. And this digital dollar project is where all this concept of, you know, digital U.S. dollars are coming from. And like we always do, you want to dig in and see who it's coming from. Well, you get Charles and Chris Giancarlo, two Roman Catholics. And oddly enough, Chris Giancarlo had a response to a Catholic document put out. And I found this from 2018. And it's a letter that Chris Giancarlo sends to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Do you know what that group is?
Well, we were just talking earlier that this is like the new modernized term for the Inquisition.
Yeah. And in fact, the offices for this group are still in the buildings that the Inquisition were in.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And so when you see this and he's dialoguing with basically the Inquisition as a Roman Catholic, you just see the interconnectedness. And it's actually that the Inquisition, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, that has records on pretty much every human being in the world. There's records on you. There's records on me. There's records on our production team. Everybody goes through these offices. And so I just found it absolutely fascinating that in it, he says that, this document that the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith put out was about the economic issues, how bad capitalism is, how unfair the system is, so on and so forth. And Giancarlo actually says, hey, I'm actually a financial professional striving to lead a moral life. We see the morality is always a part of it. But in reality, they seem to be pushing against each other, but all they're doing is trying to create this synthesis. There's subtle Hegelianism going on everywhere, but I found it fascinating that here he is dialoguing with the Inquisition offices. And here he says, on January 16th, 2020, that's important because this is before the health crisis stuff. He said that the digital 21st century is underserved by an analog reserve currency. That's our actual dollars. A digital dollar would help future-proof the greenback. So again, this is what I think this whole de-dollarization effort is doing, is just giving more ammunition to create this digital greenback. Mm-hmm. It says, we are launching the digital dollar project to catalyze a digital tokenized U.S. currency that would coexist with other Federal Reserve liabilities, aka fiat dollars. So the digital dollars and the fiat would exist at the same time, but just like the old rails and the new rails are going in parallel right now, eventually you phase out the old and only have the new. So it's the same type of thing. He said, and then goes on to show that it's not just the Digital Dollar Foundation. You've got the Digital Pound Foundation, the Digital Euro. Pretty much everyone's making a digital version of their money. It says the Bank of Canada, the Monetary Authority of Singapore, the Central European Bank, and even Sweden's Risk Bank. This was the world's first central bank to sign an agreement to develop an e-krona. So this is back in 2020. And what's strange is, like 2 months later, digital dollars are in this proposed package, or were talked about being in this proposed package to spend on the stimulus money. So did they really just start this project in January of 2020 and have it ready for March?
Quite unlikely.
It's not only unlikely, it's so strange to me that before the pandemic, if they didn't know this was going to happen, that they just happened to release it right before all this stuff goes down.
Yep.
There's no question in my mind, personally, that
good timing.
Yeah, they knew the timing of it so that way this could start being infused. Again, like a lot of people think the health crisis stuff was just about the treatments. This is about a whole movement called the Fourth Industrial Revolution.
And if you look at the progression, even think, you know, 100, 200 years ago, how did we used to trade or pay for things? It was by some physical value, whether that's gold, silver, you know, we had actual tangible currency.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to printed. Well, that's kind of the first step away from something that's actually like a physical product.
Yeah.
So you can print your money now. And it's supposed to be backed by something physical.
Right.
You know, you have the reserves or whatever. But how, I mean, if you look at how the process of the banking functions, it's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You're allowed to loan 10 times the value of what you actually have.
Yeah.
So you're creating 10 times the debt on top of what you're obtaining. But then if that doesn't work, then you have to redo that again. So you just keep printing and you come into the situation that we're in right now, which is nothing's backed by physical anything. So we're like at the top of this house of cards, just waiting to be just gently pushed over, and the whole thing goes flat. Huge crisis from very little upset even.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this flip over to the new rails.
The new system. And it's interesting because, you know, as soon as that physical money became paper, it stopped being produced without usury attached to it. So as soon as the Federal Reserve, and that's the whole Titanic story where all the opposition of the mm-hmm. Titanic, the main ones, died on the ship. Even J.P. Morgan was supposed to be on it. It was his deal,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't go. And then shortly after that, they create the Federal Reserve. It's about as Federal Express. It has nothing to do with the government. And now the American people and other people around the world, every dollar they print, it comes. There's no way you could ever give it back because you can't generate new money without the money coming with the interest on it.
Yeah.
So it's like a slave debt system to begin with. And in essence, they're trying to intentionally break the system
mm-hmm.
so that way they can reset it and put it on these new rails. And I think given what we've seen, that's a pretty fair assessment to make.
Yeah.
So all of this now, we've pretty much covered everything that we're going to do to lay the groundwork. And the idea was so that people understood how all this was connected. And now when we zoom into Elon Musk and Jared Kushner and all these guys on the private public side, when we dive into Lucius Trust, when we dive into some of these
different government agencies,
it will be with more context. and people can come back and see how it all fits within this larger macro system. This is really just a summary to allow us in future episodes, and it may not be the next one, but just in future episodes to dive in and always refer back to these things. Yeah.
This is in effect the new Babel structure, right? One world organization, one world government, and God had to come and confuse the languages to separate everybody, but Satan's in the works of bringing this whole thing back again into this one world system because that's what he wants.
Yep.
Instead of God having a one world system that is based on freedom and on truth, Satan wants it worshiped for himself. And this is kind of all his forces on all angles working.
Yep.
And there are all these little tiny puzzle pieces that make up the entire picture.
Yep. And even parts look like it's pushing against one side, but it will all eventually end in, as the top says, a no buy, no sell system.
Yep.
And we talked a lot about how they need designed crises for this to occur. And oddly enough, the UN just put out this report. You can see the link at the bottom there if you want to go check it out. Times of crisis and times of change. And so their whole thing has been the 2030 agenda. And as we know from the Club of Rome, the whole 2050 is like the real end date for them. So we're talking about like a 27 some odd year period from where we sit today. It says to achieve processes locally, nationally, and globally to reach the goals will require truly transformative action with radically new efforts and approaches. This report recommends, therefore, that member states agree on a transformational framework for accelerated action. First action plan should be presented at the high-level political forum in 2024. So here they are planning out what kind of crises could give them the radical new efforts and approaches they need to accomplish these goals. Now, this will be kind of how we close out this one, but there's been a lot of talk about one particular method that would really catalyze a lot of what's happening here. Now, in 2019, the World Economic Forum did two exercises as like a trial preparation. One was something called Event 201, which was a coronavirus-like pandemic that actually happened in 2020. The other one they did was an event called Cyber Polygon, which was a global internet shutdown. And we're going to hear from Klaus Schwab on what he says about this. But when you break it all down, what that exercise did was it was a supply chain attack, and it broke down the supply chains in real time. Then by solving the solution, they talked about having centralized control over the internet. So now instead of it being a free internet, you'll have government control as rationalized because you have these attacks. In this, you can then come back with cybersecurity recommendations that are really just surveillance and data collection practices. And then obviously the potential for misuse in this is after turning it back on, you input policies that serve their goals and their views and actually suppress dissenting voices. So you could bring the whole civil society down just by bringing down the internet. Imagine you can't, your grocery stores aren't filled up.
Yeah.
Your hospitals aren't working. Your police stations can't communicate with each other. You're talking about utter chaos that could occur.
This is kind of what's been taking place over in Israel and Gaza, and everything's been shutting down. People can't communicate. They shut all the internet off, all the phone off, everything. And this is only a small area.
Yeah.
You know, we see these things happening. We think, oh, it can't come to me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's, I'm so glad I'm in America or in Canada or in, you know, pick a country, right? But these are all things to test out how these functionalities will work. And then they will bring those.
Just like the pandemic, you know, there's nowhere you could go. The whole world was essentially touched, all the main places. And we see just as recently as October 4th, 2023, that the FBI's warning now of these cyber attacks, they're on the rise, and I think we're going to see more and more of these things. And here's how Klaus Schwab describes it himself, where he says the cyber pandemic would make COVID look like basically a minor disturbance.
We all know, but still pay insufficient attention to the frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole. The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack. To use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity to reflect on the lessons the cybersecurity community can draw and improve our preparedness for a potential cyber pandemic.
The COVID-19 pandemic has shaken our economies and societies to the core and shown us how vulnerable we are to biological threats. In the digital world, similar risks are being overlooked right now. A cyber attack with COVID-like characteristics would spread faster and further than any biological virus. Its reproductive rate would be around 10 times greater than what we've experienced with the coronavirus. To give you an idea, one of the fastest worms in history, the 2003 Slammer Sapphire Worm, doubled in size approximately every 8.5 seconds, infecting over 75,000 devices in 10 minutes and almost 11 million devices in 24 hours. Fortunately, at least until now, cyber attacks have not impacted our health the way pandemics have, but the economic damages, and therefore the impact they have had on our daily lives, have been equal and sometimes even greater. You see, the only way to stop the exponential propagation of a COVID-like cyber threat is to fully disconnect the millions of vulnerable devices from one another and from the internet. All of this in a matter of days. A single day without the internet would cost our economies more than $50 billion, and that's before considering the economic and societal damages should these devices be linked to essential services such as transport or healthcare. As the digital realm increasingly merges with our physical world, the ripple effects of cyber attacks on our safety just keep on expanding at a faster pace than what we're preparing for. COVID-19 was known as an anticipated risk. So is the digital equivalent. Let's be better prepared for that one. The time is now.
Well, that's very interesting how they connect the correlation that there is a cyber pandemic,
mm-hmm.
10 times faster than any other virus,
mm-hmm.
and that it won't affect your health, but the economy. And the only way to fix it would be to disconnect all devices.
And that's the key to me, is when you listen to the solution, is like, it's not the virus that kills everything off. It's that the threat of the virus makes them say, well, it's better for us to turn it off before it goes everywhere. And so I think that's probably a pretty good likelihood of what we're going to see in the future, is not even a real hack that like the Sapphire Worm that they talked about, but just the threat of a hack to give them justification to turn these things off. Now, when or if that will happen, we don't know, but we want people to be aware or prepared. So if this were to happen, know that it's all part of turning this new digital system back on,
yeah,
to create chaos, to give support for universal basic income, the new financial rails. So much of what's happening in this fourth industrial revolution is to accelerate this digital transformation.
They're letting you know that they will do this soon.
Mm-hmm.
They're letting you know, hey, we're going to have to turn you off. We're going to have to fix a big problem that's coming. We're just going to let you know we're getting ready for it. Be prepared. You don't want us to be so unprepared like for the health crisis.
Right.
So we're going to be much more prepared. So if something happens and there's a huge shift and a huge change, just know that we got it under control.
And we'll shut off the internet to save you guys.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. So a lot of what we've talked about may lead a lot of people into feeling fearful right now. This is not intended to make people fearful. This is intended to help prepare us so that we're not afraid, that we go to our Bibles, that we spend time
to wake people up.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's not to cause fear, but to say, hey, the house is burning. Maybe you should wake up and then we can get outside and be safe.
Yes. And we want people not to spend more times going down rabbit holes. We try to cover enough that we're aware of it to make you realize how important your Bible is. Because mm-hmm. none of this stuff is any good knowing any of it if you don't know your personal Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
If you don't overcome by the blood of the Lamb through faith. And so, as it says in Isaiah, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. I will help thee.
Yeah.
So it's not ourselves helping ourselves. It's God that will strengthen us. It's God that will help us if we rely on him. If we take it out of God's hands, we have reason to fear.
Yeah.
But if we don't, we have nothing to fear because it's God who will take care of these things. It says in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not on thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths.
And that's probably something people are wondering. How do I know what to do about this? Trust in the Lord, and he will direct your path.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what he's telling you, and you see the warnings, and you see the things happening, then ask him and he will direct you in exactly the way that you should go.
And go back and read all the times that God has helped his people, whether it's delivering from Egypt, delivering them through what's going on in Babylon, delivering them in every time situation. That's why we have these stories. They're not just there for us to just pass them along. Mm-hmm. They'll actually help us in our times of trials. Because imagine being David and King Saul's trying to kill you. Imagine you're running around hiding because someone's trying to kill you.
Yeah.
What did David do? Right? These all are examples to say, oh, that's how I react. Yeah. That's how I trust the Lord. Because there are some people who are like, well, how do I trust the Lord? Go look at the examples of others in the Bible who made mistakes and did it right. Because there's also lots of examples of people who didn't do it right. So it shows you how not to do something and how to do something. God is not going to leave us at our time of need if we are following and asking and in faith for his help. He's a good father. I couldn't imagine my two-year-old daughter coming to me and say, Daddy, help me. I'm in trouble. And I just turn and walk the other way.
Yeah.
Right? So God is so much better of a father than I am. How much more does he want to help his little ones in Christ who need his help? So don't be afraid. Get caught up in the emotion of what's happening and go to your Bibles and study and go to adtv.watch. And study more there, where we build a whole suite of tools for people to grow and learn in this faith walk.
Yeah. Please go to adtv.watch, create a login. You'll be able to bookmark things. You'll be able to take notes. And we're always adding more tools. We need support for this project because it's going to be a great study center. We're trying to create people that aren't just viewers, aren't just consumers, but are people who share, who are people who study and get involved.
Yep.
We want people to get involved. And if you want to know how to get involved, there is many ways. We have many sharing material. We have our e-newsletters so you can stay updated on different things. And we thank you for your support, mm-hmm. for your prayers, for your financial support. And we want you to like and share these videos with everybody that you know who could be blessed by them, who need to hear some of this information. And comment down below any thoughts that you have or questions or ideas that you would maybe like us to discuss or to talk about. Won't be able to cover everything, but some things that we can answer. So thank you, Matt. This closes out part two of the No Buy, No Sell
and
topic.
We may cover stuff a little bit more later, but this is how we're going to touch on it now. And in the future episodes, we may dive quite a bit deeper into Elon and some of these other characters.
Like we've seen today, there's things happening every single day. So there's obviously going to be more things coming soon between now and the next couple years. And we thank you for watching. Please pray for us and for all the work that we're trying to do here to get the message out. And we'll see you in the next Truth Matters.